guys put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? If they paradise put up a parking lot,
if they keep on following.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome! Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, March 13th, 2024.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Our guest today is Anthony Pierleone from the Turtle Room. But first, we have a live report from the road to Albany on the way to an 11 a.m. rally to support the New York Heat Act.
Laura, you're on the air. Tell the bus.
Okay, I'm on a bus full of people chanting for New York Heat. What do we want?
Climate justice. What do we want? Climate justice. Now.
What do we want?
Climate justice.
Now.
What do we want?
So you can probably hear everybody chanting for New York Heat. We're all on our way to Albany from Manhattan to fight for the passage of an important.
No.
Oh no.
Oh no. Not a good time to lose the signal.
Oh, good grief. Everything seemed to be going really well. they're going to a rally in Albany about the New York Heat Act.
That's right. The New York Heat Act would remove subsidies that ratepayers currently pay to expand the fracked gas system in New York State. So we want to remove these unnecessary, wasteful subsidies that go to expanding the gas system that's causing climate chaos and causing the extreme weather that New Yorkers are facing and dealing with. The Heat Act would also cap utility bills for households at 6% of the household income. This is a crucial measure because as things get more and more unaffordable, our utility companies keep raising our rates. And some families pay as much as 20% of their household income towards just utilities. So this bill, the Heat Act, would cap utility bills at 6% of household income. It's a critical measure that will help us move buildings off of dirty fossil fuels and have lower bills and cleaner air. I've got some activists with me here to share why they're going up to Albany. I'm going to pass the phone over.
Hi, my name is Keanu. I'm an 18-year-old climate justice organizer with Fridays for Future New York City, and I'm heading up to Albany today with dozens of other high school students because in June our skies were orange because our streets and schools continue to be flooded. The climate crisis is here. Our generation knows it, and it's worsening day by day. And meanwhile, the fossil fuel industry and gas utilities in New York State continue to be expanding, continue to be hiking rates at the expense of our generation's future, at the expense of our climate, and at the expense of affordability. Laura mentioned the Heat Act being in the Senate One House budget, and the Senate is really pushing this bill, and we need the Assembly and Governor Hochul to follow suit, and we need to see this budget for the sake of, we need to see this budget for the sake of climate, for the sake of the young people, for the sake of my generation, to include the New York Heat Act and substantial climate action.
And we have another activist here to share why she's heading up to Albany.
Hi, my name is Caitlin, and I'm 22 years old. I recently graduated from art school, and I am here for all my peers just entering the workforce and who feel tons of climate anxiety. It's a heavy weight on us all, and I want to fight for a better future where everyone can do what they love, and the New York Heat Act is a huge part of that.
And this is Laura Schindel again from Food and Water Watch. We've got about 50 or so people on this bus heading up to Albany. We're about a half hour out. Today we'll be rallying with a bunch of legislators that are speaking out in support of passing the HEAT Act in the budget, and then we'll be doing lobbying. We'll lobby legislators at their offices scheduled. We'll also lobby them in the hallways, drop off care packages of lollipops to their offices, urging them to pass New York HEAT in the budget this year.
Laura, there's people listening on the internet. Where should they meet you at 11 a.m.? Where's the rally?
Oh, awesome. So at 11 a.m., we will be gathering and, you know, getting situated in the legislative office building, room 211. Is at noon at 12 p.m., at the million-dollar staircase is what it's known as at the Capitol. So if they show up at 11, they should gather with us and in Legislative Office Building, room 211. And if they show up at noon, they should meet us at the million-dollar staircase for the big rally. And we'll dispatch afterwards for lunch and lobbying.
And that 6% cap for utilities, I hope, will motivate people to make sure that those who need that 6% the most get energy efficiency so that their utility bills are way smaller. And the smaller their utility bills because of efficiency, the easier it will be for them to be at 6%.
Yes.
So this could have a long range effect.
A critical piece of the puzzle in moving off of fossil fuels, absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Laura, and thank for everybody on the bus.
Yeah.
All right.
What do we want? Climate justice. When do we want it? Now.
What do we want?
Climate justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. And now we'll get to Anthony Pirulioni.
Now, Ken. Now we have Lydia Adams-Davis and Kathy Byers from their CD, One Earth So Green and Round, with Why Do Turtles Cross the Road?
Why do turtles cross the road? Asked my dad as our car slowed. They live over there in pond or bog, swimming, sunning, basking on logs. So why encounter a speeding car to take a risk to go that far? Stop, I cried, I learned in a book. Guide her along the direction she took. Seeking a place that's best to lay her eggs in an underground nest. Place them safely beneath the ground, well tamped down where they won't be found.
A season will pass, the egg tooth cracks, the shell gives way when it's time to hatch. Coin-sized turtles claw up to the sun, their newborn journey has begun. The scent of pond will guide their feet, making their way to cross the street.
Winter comes, their heart slows down, burrowed safely underground. In 5 short years, their lives mature. Count the rings on their shell to be sure. Mating in playful water ballet, the cycle of life begins this way. why turtles cross the road. Instinct tells them where to go. No road can block the path they take. Nature's plan makes no mistake. Let's post a sign so all will know. Turtle crossing, please drive slow. Turtle crossing, please drive slow.
That was Lydia Adams Davis and Cassie Byers from their CD, One Earth So Green and Round. A whole CD of environmental songs with Why Do Turtles Cross the Road? It's an entire episode of Ecologic in a 2.5 minute song.
Wonderful.
Now we welcome Anthony Pierleone. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Anthony. I have to admit, I am more inspired in this very moment than I think I have been in my entire life. And I don't like to speak in absolutes. The great Canadian philosopher Justin Bieber taught us to never say never. So that was a wonderful lead in. I'm just sitting here enjoying the ride. So thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you for having me here. Professionally, I work in the veterinary field. I'm a veterinary leader and trainer and training leader, I suppose, is a good term for it. I work for one of the largest, if not the largest, veterinary companies in the world. And before that, I was a social worker. So I'm one of the rare animal people that really enjoys the people side of conservation, which I think is a rude awakening that a lot of people realize, you know, going through, you know, life as an environmental activist and conservationist. And I've been obsessed with turtles since I was 5 years old. And unlike most people, I never grew out of it. So, you know, the more really with the growing popularity of the internet, I just happened to start finding some more information at a time when I had gotten a new pet, and I just never slowed down. And the daily obsession, the unwavering, unrelenting obsession has never gone. So here I am.
So how are turtles and tortoises doing globally?
That's a great question. And I suppose the question of the hour here, it's not a good situation, generally speaking, for turtles. There are some species that do better than others. There are some species that have gone extinct in our lifetime. And, you know, when you consider turtles have remained virtually unchanged for 200 million years, that's a pretty wild fact when you consider that T-Rex lived 65 million years ago. So we're talking three times longer than the time since T-Rex roamed the earth is how long turtles have been turtles and really been like the turtles that we know and love today. And it's now only with, you know, the entire surface of the globe changing so much due to our human activities that turtles now, you know, why did the turtle cross the road? It certainly didn't want to. So that song is terrific because it brings, you know, awareness to the fact that turtles are navigating this landscape that they never had to navigate before. And they were designed perfectly to survive forever. And now we see that that's not possible for many species. And I'll just add, just as an aside, as recent as the 1970s, the textbook that was being used to teach zoologists who were studying to become zoologists compared turtles basically to cockroaches, that they've existed for 200 million years, virtually unchanged, and they will be around long after humans are gone. And maybe that might be true for a turtle species or two, but for the vast majority of turtles, being that they're the most endangered vertebrate group on the planet, we know that that's not true.
How many species of turtles are there and how many places can they be found?
I can't give you the actual number. It's always changing the nomenclature, and then you have the species and the subspecies and all that, but it's about 350, 360 different taxa. What was the second part of your question?
Can they be found on every continent? Where are they found?
Oh, that's great question. So basically, besides, you know, the really, really cold areas, we do have some turtles that are very cold tolerant that live in some pretty harsh areas and have a very short active period of even a couple weeks for some desert species, but that's certainly the case for species that are living in cold areas as well. But turtles are found all over the globe, besides, you know, the poles basically. And there's a lot of diversity. You know, there are quite few turtle species when you consider other types of reptiles. So, you know, snakes have many more species. You're talking in the thousands as compared to the turtles, which are only about 350. But even given that fact, there's a great amount of unique species within that really differ greatly. You know, there are species that tap out at just maybe 3 inches for some species in some localities of species. And then you have turtles that grow to be the size of a car. And everything in between, turtles that live, you know, their lifetime never coming out of the water, and turtles that almost never go in the water. So there's a lot of variation there.
When you talk about how long turtles have been here, were there more species, you know, in the Mesozoic era than there are now, or is this sort of the height of the number of species of turtle?
That's a good question. I think when we look back, you know, historically, and we look at the fossil record and things like that, turtles are an interesting one. And not to take anything away from any other animals, but there are a lot of turtle species that went extinct recently due to overhunting by humans. So, you know, there were giant tortoises that lived in Florida that went extinct because of humans. You know, you look at the Galapagos Islands, you know, where the theory of evolution was, you know, became kind of what it is. The tortoises were a part of that. You have the tortoises over here with the saddle shaped shell. And then the tortoises over here that get a little bit larger or a lot larger and have the more dome shell. And there are several tortoise species, Galapagos tortoise species from the different islands that are now extinct because it was known for a really long time. Over centuries that, you know, you could take this tortoise on board your ship and you can feed it nothing for 2 months while you're at sea. And that thing will stay alive and give you fresh meat whenever you need it. So it's like a, you know, it comes with its own bowl that could be cooked in on the fire in its shell. It's got its own refrigerator because you don't have to worry about keeping the meat fresh. I know. But when you consider, you know, the harsh conditions that the people at sea were up against, and here's this faraway strange land that's just, you know, at some point on your journey where you can just pick up a tortoise and have it so that you don't have to lose a member of your party, a human member of your party. And that just goes back to humans always prioritizing human life over animal life, right? We see an animal that gets hit by a car and we just drive past it again and again, and we see it a week later, it's still there, which we would never do if there was a human who got hit by a car.
Well, a little unfortunate karma. Today I read an article about how a group of people ate a sea turtle, and they there was a toxin in there that was never identified, and several people died, and several people got sick. So unfortunate karma. Don't eat sea turtles.
You know, it's funny. I had a guest on my podcast the other day, an environmentalist, a researcher, who I had gone out in the field with before. And we were doing some work with common snapping turtles, which is a species that's native to New York and to my home state of Connecticut. And up until recently, people were coming from all over the Northeast and even the country to come and commercially harvest snapping turtles in Connecticut. Luckily, there's new laws in place that definitely cut down on that. But the work that we were doing was actually sampling tissues. We were taking clippings of nails and also blood samples from the base of the tail from these snapping turtles, because turtles are a great kind of canary in the coal mine sort of group of animals, where if there's something going on in the environment, we can test them because they're so long lived that they're around forever. So if something happens, we can test them. We were looking for contaminants within the snapping turtles, and the research found that there was actually a lot. So the turtles were doing okay, but just word to the wise, you know, maybe turtle is not the best thing to be taking out of different areas, because they definitely take on some of the nastiness that we put out into the environment.
Which reminds me of a story that Ken tells about the turtles in Central Park and people releasing their pet turtles. Ken?
Yeah. If anybody who's walked through Central Park in the summer has seen dozens and dozens of turtles basking. In fact, they call one of the ponds Turtle Pond because they're so ubiquitous there. But they're not native to New York. Almost every one of them is a red-eared slater, and they're not native to here. And the ones that are native have been, I guess, what would you call it, Anthony, outcompeted?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what makes it, I mean, there are different things that can make it an invasive species, but we know that it's that species has been introduced. So just so everyone knows, red-eared sliders have, since the 50s, been the most popular pet turtle species. This is the species that you may have bought, you know, at a dime store back many years ago. And they grow to very large sizes, up to 11 inches. Now, not many of those small ones don't always grow to 11 inches, but the ones that do oftentimes end up being released because people don't know what they're getting into. And turtles live a long time. So these sliders can live 50, 60 years that we know of, and possibly even more in captivity. And they can also survive our winters. And what happens is then when they get large, it's tough to take care of them in how most people take care of turtles is in aquariums. I would recommend something with a larger footprint, maybe made out of plastic, like a feeding trough for livestock or a storage tote, something like that. And there's not enough filtration. So the water gets green and it gets smelly. And then we decide to let our turtle go. And it definitely is an issue. And now we're just seeing, because, you know, we have to prove this out with science. We know that they've been introduced in about as many countries as the Super Bowl is in, but there's definitely a lot that we're learning now that shows that they actually are invasive.
And you're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale.
For Women's History Month, we have a 3-CD set, Women and the Environment, for a $75 pledge. The set includes Rachel Carson, Lily Tomlin, Dr. Helen Caldicott, and Vandana Shiva. We also have a Women's History Month thumb drive with 50 hours of important women. This month only, new BAI buddies for Ecologic get the Women's History Drive as thanks for their generous commitment. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
And back to our guest, Anthony Pierleone from the Turtle Room. Now, you donated copies of your latest book to WBAI. Tell us about it.
I would love to. Thank you so much. Yeah. Basically, this new book was written by my wife and I. She had me read a book called I Do Now What that was written by Juliana Rancic and Bill Rancic, who was like the first winner of The Apprentice. This is like amazing literature, right? I'm being a little sarcastic. But one thing that always stuck with me when she showed me that book was the way that it was written is like he would write a paragraph or two and then she would write a paragraph or two and they would have this back and forth, kind of like if you were on a double date with somebody and the couple is telling the story, you know, and it goes back and forth. So I always found that kind of like a charming idea. And we had this idea for a book and basically it's our life together, her being married to somebody who's obsessed with something strange. There used to be a show called The Marriage Ref, which was the same premise. And basically, you know, she puts up with me, I put up with her, we find common ground. And the fact that we are completely different in pretty much everything is what makes us such a strong team. And I'm very proud of it. So basically, you know, it's a book about turtles, it's a book about, you know, being an environmental advocate or a turtle advocate, and then what it's like to be married to that person and to be a part of that. So hilarity ensues, and it's us basically telling a lot of stories about our life together and what that's like.
So it's a mixed marriage, a turtle lover and a non-turtle lover.
Correct. Yes. And she tries. I will say, you know, she was an educator for very young children, like a preschool teacher in her former life. And she loves to teach kids. So we do a lot of educational, you know, sessions that for all ages. And when it's maybe middle school or above, that's my territory. But if it's small kids, it's her territory. So she actually will get out and teach kids about turtles now. We've come a very, very long way from our first attending a reptile show together and her getting her hair professionally done and wearing heels to the reptile show. We've come a long way.
Yeah, when I saw you at the New York Turtle and Tortoise Society, you talked about her helping you find a house for your turtles.
Yes.
It's like you were shopping for a house not just for you and your kids, but for your turtles. And she was the one who found it.
Yeah, and she was excited too because she knew, right? There's certain things, you know, she needed it's just like an episode of House Hunters, except this weird twist where, you know, the husband needs space for his turtles. And it's not just, you know, these aren't pets. These are breeding colonies. And basically we needed to turn a house into a turtle farm. So that was my part of what I do. And that's part, you know, for what I do as a conservationist, we do basically try to breed species that are extinct in the wild, very rare species, just like zoos do. But zoos don't always care about the little, you know, the different little species that are out there. Like I talked about the Galapagos tortoises, and as an analogy, I'll use the finches from the Galapagos tortoises with all the different beaks. It doesn't make sense for a zoo to have all of these finches on display, but you know, they are different animals and they need to be preserved. So a lot of those different turtles that maybe don't bring people through the turnstiles at your larger zoos and aquariums are species that we're prioritizing and trying to breed. So that's part of what we do. The other piece is we actually do have, you know, in situ conservation programs and population management programs in the wild, both in the US and abroad. And then we do a lot of educational work as well. So those are kind of the three areas, the captive side, the in situ in the wild side, and then the educational piece.
And what's the name of the book?
Oh, yeah. We were talking about the book, weren't we? So the book is called Turtly Devoted to You. And it's exactly how I explained it. It's a really fun. It was a really fun project. And I'm very proud to have been able to do that with her. I've published books in the past, but this one really meant a lot because we did it together.
Yeah, it's the team book. Yeah.
There's a quote from Simon Sinek that I really like, and I think it fits really well with the environmental message, which is, if you say, I want to work somewhere or I want to do something where I can make the biggest impact, that sounds like a nice quote. It's a nice sentiment, right? But if we say it that way, we're doing it wrong. I want to be a part of something where we can make the biggest impact because we know that together we can do so much more. And it may sound cliche, but it really is true that only when we, you know, can join together and perhaps even, you know, involve people, find a way to involve people from opposite sides of the aisle, can we actually really make a difference.
And Anthony donated some copies of that book to WBAI. And if you go to give2wbai.org, it's the first thing that shows up. And so for a $45 donation, you become a member of WBAI and you get a copy of this wonderful book. A lot of fun, and you, I'm sure you're getting a sense of how much fun it is listening to Anthony today. So a $45 donation to WBAI, tax deductible, membership included, and you call 212-209-2950, or you go to give2wbai.org, and it's right there.
That's great.
So the turtles that you breed, do they stay with you? Do you send them back into the wild, other captive places?
It's a really good question. For the I've never produced an animal that's gone back to the wild, and that makes me feel really sad to say that because that's the ultimate goal always. But really, that it's more kind of preservation, and it only becomes conservation in my mind when those animals become really rare. So there are some species that I've produced that are extinct in the wild and they could go back except for the fact that they'll be snatched up and will end up in the wild animal markets again. So it's complicated. And when you look at like species here in the US, we don't have as many species that have gone extinct recently in the wild. So we do have some that are very rare, but then when they're still out there, there are significant risks with reintroduction or head starting programs, programs where you're hatching animals and then releasing them. Anything that they are exposed to, you know, from a disease perspective, can have a huge impact on the environment and the other animals that are already hurting. So we have to be very cautious, and generally, biologists are very cautious. And that's something that from on the captive side of things that I advocate for and try to teach people about a lot, is that it's more of a pie in the sky idea to reintroduce animals, except for when we get to the point where there are none left. So there have been some instances, you know, islands where the tortoise species has been wiped out and we introduce other tortoises because we know how important they can be for seed dispersal and for keeping the entire environment healthy. There are some native plants that we want to see more of that really only do well when the seeds pass through the gut of a tortoise. So for those reasons, it can make a lot of sense to reintroduce animals, but it's multifaceted and challenging at best.
So if you introduce turtle that's not native to that island, it'll still help get those seeds to germinate, even though it's a different species.
And that's a really rare example. That's just a kind of a one-off example, but yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot that we can do if we're creative and if the situation is right. So I think the important piece to keep in mind here is that it's really just a one size fits one. And there have been a lot of times where things have, you know, interventions that biologists have tried really don't work out, and it has a really detrimental effect. So it's always proceeding with caution. And my organization has never been a part of any project. Well, we do have one project where we hatch eggs and we don't feed the hatchlings. We just release them immediately. We just touch them with gloves on and release them right into the environment. The eggs are incubated away from any other animals, away from anything else, and they're just released right to where the eggs were laid. So that's the closest that we've got to actually putting animals into the environment. And those eggs are collected because the predators in that area are so bad that virtually no nests make it into the water. And that's for the diamondback terrapin, which is a New York species, and even a New York City species.
Yeah, the diamondback terrapin nests in New York City, at Jamaica Bay, and elsewhere.
Our project is in New Jersey, but yes, yeah, very similar terrapins to the ones that are in Jamaica Bay.
Yeah, Laurie Kramer, who was with the New York Turtle and Tortoise Society, talked about getting a terrapin that was literally run over by a truck and nursing it back to health. It took her 5 years, but it came back. And that was found in Rockaway. So they seem to nest in a lot. And I remember going birding at Jamaica Bay and seeing literally hundreds of little terrapin heads sticking out of the water. It was their breeding season. They're all hanging out just outside Jamaica Bay. It was a wonderful sight to see.
That's exactly what they do. They sit in the water. So there's this term for when sea turtles do this in South America called the arribada. And that's where they all come up together when the conditions are right, when the time is right, and they nest at the same time. It's thought to, you know, help protect from predators and things. The eggs will hatch around the same time. And diamondback terrapins do their own version of that, where they hang out in the marsh. The problem for the diamondback terrapin is that because they're a brackish species that lives in an area where freshwater meets saltwater, they are basically in the places that humans love to inhabit the most.
Boy.
So they're at huge risk throughout their range. And their range is interesting. If you look at it, it goes from Cape Cod all the way around the coast of the United States, all the way through the Gulf and to Texas. So it's a species that has a very long range, but is affected by human activities all the way through its entire long range.
And those are all one species with that huge range?
Correct. One species, but there are several different subspecies. So our subspecies that we have in New Jersey and in Jamaica Bay in New York is the northern diamondback terrapin. Malaclemmys terrapin. Is the scientific name.
So if somebody wanted to see turtles and not get close, because we don't want to endanger them, what are good spots to go and check them out?
That's a good question. Do you mean in the wild or zoos or?
I mean our listeners.
Good question, too.
Yeah, it's, anyway. You know, turtles, I think probably the easiest is to go to a pond where they're basking. You know, turtles are so much fun. And that, to me, is my favorite place on Earth. Like, remember, I'm right when I'm out in the springtime and I hear the birds and I smell the swamp. I know that sounds odd. I'm right back to when I was a kid, doing whatever I could do with no money in my pocket, you know, and observing turtles in their environment, just hanging out in a log, basking, you know, sticking their back legs out to act as like solar panels to get as much of the sun as they can. That is like my favorite. So, and I think that's the easiest way to see turtles. I think when we talk about diamondback terrapins, they don't come out of the marsh unless it's that time. So unless you're lucky as Ken mentioned, to see them when they're about to come out, then you're not going to see one of them unless they're crossing the road or nesting or that sort of thing. But those pond turtles, if the sun is out and it's above 35, 40 degrees, you'll probably see painted turtles basking. And, it's a great thing to see. A friend is working on a book that will list what zoos have the most turtles too. So if you're interested in that, that'll be published soon. And he's gone to basically every zoo in the United States, and any zoo that has over 5 turtles will be listed in the book, which is really interesting too, because somebody like myself who wants to know where are they, I might be traveling for work and I say, I wonder if there's a zoo in the area that has a decent collection, because it seems kind of random. Some zoos happen to prioritize, you know, the Bronx Zoo is a good example. For a long time, they prioritized turtles, and they still do, but it's changed with different curators, that maybe this curator comes in and cares about frogs, and now all of a sudden some of the turtles go to other zoos, and now there's a bunch more frogs when you go. So you can see the collection change.
I think it's what you were talking about before, that they don't have the draw, that maybe the zoos would have more if people went there and said and asked about them. So yeah, that's something for our viewers to do. Next time you go to a zoo, ask them where the turtles are and tell them that you want to see them.
That's a good point. Yeah, and when I talk about what brings people through the turnstiles, it's like, if you look at the list, and I've been able to see this now because of this work that my colleague is doing, all the zoos have an alligator snapping turtle, which is this iconic species, and for good reason. All the zoos have a giant tortoise species. But, you know, these little turtles that are so important and going extinct, most zoos don't have them because people just say, it's just a turtle.
Aw.
When you showed pictures of the dwarf turtle from Africa, that was fascinating, those little guys.
Yeah, I love small turtles. I'm in Connecticut, where real estate and heat is not cheap. So I do specialize in smaller turtles, and they're my favorite, these really small turtles. But they're not popular as pets, because in America we have the 4-inch law, which prohibits the sale of turtles under 4 inches. And some of these species never reach 4 inches in their whole lifetime. So definitely not at the time when they're being produced. And that's another reason why the Red Ear Slider continues to remain popular in states that allow it being sold.
The rationale for the 4-inch laws is to protect people from buying babies or what?
Yeah. So people, kids, there were reports of children handling turtles a lot, but then also even putting small turtles in their mouths at the time when turtles were very popular in the 1970s still in those dime stores. So what happens though is that Red Ear Sliders grow to 4 inches really fast in Louisiana turtle farms. So that's the turtle that's still provided as a pet. And then now as they get outlawed, the next species that's just like it takes its place. And then the alternative for tortoises is tortoises that are taken out of the wild overseas, shipped here, a wild animal, and then sold to you at Petco or PetSmart with its entire, you know, parasite load and everything else to walk around your kitchen floor. So the key here is that what's widely available as pets, because pet stores are definitely not allowed to sell under 4 inches, what they're providing you is not what's best for you. It's what's best for still being able to have a markup and keep the animals at the right price point for people that are looking to make an impulse purchase. So just be careful. I think the lesson is, be careful when you're looking to get a turtle. And you can purchase, you know, there are ways to purchase a turtle under 4 inches if it's the verbiage is if it's for bona fide scientific research or education. So they can be sold online. under 4 inches, it's not enforced as much. So the way to go if you're looking for a turtle is researching and trying to find something online as opposed to buying one at a pet store.
Which is unfortunate. An interesting point about turtles, because they live so long, if you're going to have a turtle, you have to put it in your will. I know a woman that had a turtle, and she didn't know what she was going to do. So she found a little girl that lived next door that loved her turtle as much as she did, and she willed it to the little girl because it's going to outlive you.
Absolutely. I'm in several wills, so for that same reason. But it's... it's important to know. And even if it's just somebody who's going to come in and do what's best, you know, for you and the animal.
Okay. And you're listening to WBAI's Ecologic. Ecologic is a premier environmental show right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert.
Now we welcome your calls for our guest, Anthony Pierleone. The number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And to get Anthony's book, donate $45, and you'll also become a member of WBAI. If you are near Albany listening to the show on the internet, the rally will be starting as this show ends, so go forth and add your voice.
Friends of Liberty State Park have alerted us to the close of a New Jersey DEP comment period this Saturday, March 16th. The state task force includes members of billionaire Paul Fireman's privatization team, and it's important that they hear from residents. Go to folsp.org or ecoradio.org to learn how to be heard.
When WBII is sure that the bills will get paid, we can plan our shows and do less fundraising, so we can bring you more environmental news and information, even some songs, I hope. Your BAI Buddy Pledge helps that happen, as does any donation anytime. No donation is too small or too big. Remember, tell them you're donating in the name of Ecologic. Just go to give2wbai.org and put eco-logic in the search box, or just get Anthony's books right there. To choose from our premiums, call 212-209-2950. Make your donation today.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
Oh, Anthony, you got a lot of calls. So let's go to our first caller, 212-209-2877 is that number.
Good morning. It's Judith. And there's a big celebrity on the Upper West Side. He's a big old tortoise named George. And he lives if you know George. Yeah. Okay. So I'll get off the phone and talk about George. People come to that pet store just to visit George, and I recommend it. It's a lovely visit. Thank you for everything you do. I'll get off the phone.
Thank you, Judith.
I don't know George. Do you know? Do you guys know George?
I do not.
I wonder what species George is. I would assume probably a sulcata tortoise, Centrocheles sulcata, because that's a popular large tortoise species. That's in the price point usually that they're on display at like pet stores and things. And they're amazing. My goal one day was to move to Florida and have a farm, but they are produced in pretty high numbers. So I'm trying to work on some more.
Oh, he must have been named after the famous George the tortoise.
Is the Galapagos Lonesome George?
Yeah.
Oh, Lonesome George. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible. It's just a good tortoise name though, too. Right. I mean, hey there, George.
Okay, well, we have...
Judith is on the Upper West Side, so I suspect the pet shop is there.
Yeah, I'll start checking wonderful. Out the pet shops. Thank you, Judith. What's our next caller?
Yeah, hi, good morning. I was just wondering what the effects on climate change has had on turtles as well as tortoises throughout the Pacific and the Atlantic and Africa. What's the effect of climate change has had on the turtles and tortoises?
That's a wonderful question. I'm really happy that you asked it. You know, there's so many things that we could talk about. I could talk about this for 10 hours. We could do a filibuster. I know this isn't the platform for that, but this is one that I would love to have come up. So I'm so happy that you asked it. You know, the majority of turtles are temperature sex dependent determined. So, you know, alligators are as well. So American alligators, the males are produced at high temperatures. So for turtles, the majority of the species are temperature sex determined as well. But those are the opposite of alligators, which is females are produced at high temperatures generally. Now, there is a little more wiggle room there. There's also been research that shows that embryos within the egg can actually move to one side of the egg or the other to make themselves male or female a little bit.
Wow.
Which is so fascinating, I know. But when you think about, you know, it's just a couple of degrees. What difference does it make? Well, it makes a huge difference because the difference between male or female within an egg for these species is a couple of degrees. So it's very important to take into account as we move forward. You know, obviously there's, you know, with sea level rising and changes to the environment from that and you know, the loss of important nesting areas for both sea turtles and brackish turtles as well. Also, you know, changes to the environment for freshwater turtles. It's just the impact that humans have is huge, and that's definitely part of it.
I got George's address.
All right. Everybody go visit George.
Yes, 98th Street and Broadway. It's the east side of the block, and it's downstairs in the cellar. He's got the wholesaler. He gets the wholesaler. So visit George at 98th and Broadway. You can tell them that Ecologic sent you.
That's the pet shop I go to. That's called Petqua.
Oh, okay.
And you never met George, though.
You never met George.
I've been downstairs. I haven't. Yeah. All right.
It must have been his off day. He was at home that day. He didn't come in.
Do we have another caller?
Yeah.
Hello, next caller.
212-209-2877. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Angel. How's everyone doing?
Oh, good.
Hey, good to hear from you.
Good. Yeah, a couple of points. One was I did have a red-eared slider that started as the size of almost a quarter and grew to be, you know, like an 11 or 12 incher for about 30 years. And well, when we had to kind of have him adopted, we did bring him to Petqua. So that was a wonderful experience on 98. And I had a question about the turtles that get dumped into the Central Park when they drain it. Do we know where they wind up? And I knew of a person, I think he was in the Lower East Side, where he would bring turtles down south, if I recall, many years ago. Do you know anything about that phenomena of people who kind of take turtles and relocate them? Thank you very much. I'll listen off air.
I'll see you at People's Forum on Saturday for Raging Radical Elders Day of Action.
That's a great question, Angel, and I appreciate you sharing your experience with Red-Ear Slider yourself to set that up as well, because that's exactly what I mean, and I don't think people really realize that that's what they're getting into. There's several different things that happen to sliders in the wild. So if biologists find them, sometimes they're euthanized. So that's number one, just because there are so many of them and there's no place for them. And I know that that's sad, but I think people need to realize that even now, we're at the point right now of oversaturation because people continue to buy them and people continue to think that they can make a quick buck off of selling them. So it's important that we're not buying red ear sliders, even if we need to see the bigger picture, see the forest through the trees there. I have heard of people relocating turtles down south. That's definitely a great thing, but also, you know, they need to be going into a controlled area and not just, you know, released, even where red ear sliders are native, because we don't know exactly where those animals are coming from. It muddies the gene pool. They could be carrying something, you know, especially if they've been living in a different area, if they've been living out in the wild, if they've been exposed to other animals that came from pet stores. We know the effect that, you know, pathogens, diseases can have on, mm-hmm. on not just us, but animals as well. And then the other thing is even up here, finding people who have ponds that are fenced in and turtle proof, so they're not going to escape, so that the turtles, and that's been what I personally have done most, because when you're a turtle person, you get calls and emails and texts about radio sliders constantly, is finding people who have fenced in ponds where the turtles can go, because radio sliders live very happily here, even though their range is in the southern United States. They handle our winters just fine, and they're breeding up here in our northern states as well.
And if you go to Central Park, especially the lake, which is bigger than Turtle Pond, you can, if you really take a close look at all the turtles that are basking, you will see more than just red-eared sliders. I have seen painted turtles in Central Park.
That's good. That's good to hear.
Well, it's my red-eared slider got lost in my lawn, and I hope it made its way into the bayou in New Orleans when I was a kid. Sorry about that. Well, it's time to wrap up. So thanks for joining us. For more information, go to www.theturtleroom.org. That's theturtleroom.org. Ecoradio.org has information on a wide variety of environmental issues, and you can find links to our previous shows as well. If you'd like a follow-up or a news report on any of our previous shows or news items, email us using the clickable link near the top of the page, just under the promo meme. And please go to give2wbai.org to become a BAI buddy in the name of Ecologic, or choose a premium.
Join us next Wednesday, March 20th at 10 a.m. We'll be catching up on a lot of environmental news. We love to stay in touch with you, so those of you online, please sign up for our email list or like our Facebook page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
We welcome you to get involved with WBAI. Check the WBAI.org homepage meeting section for dates and times. And, of course, we always need your contributions to support everything that makes the broadcast happen. Pledging as an Ecologic BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are always glad to have you with us for Ecologic Live or on the archives. This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
And you can get Anthony Pierleone's book and donate to WBAI at the same time by calling 212-209-2950. Make your donation today or go to give2wbai.org. And Turtley Yours is right there at the top of the page. Turtley Yours, give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950. It's a $45 pledge. And thank you very much for listening. And thank you, Michael, for being here. And thank you to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us on Wednesday, March 20th at 10 a.m. for a roundup of environmental news. We're usually here Wednesdays at 10 a.m. between Covert Action Bulletin and Living for the City. Living for the City will not be on today. Check our website for details. Thank you for being our listeners. And thank you, Anthony.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So
give me the power of the wind. Give me the
Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnestead. President Joe Biden and Republican Donald Trump won big in the presidential primaries in Georgia, Hawaii, Missouri, and Washington states Tuesday. They each garnered enough delegates to advance as their party's candidates to the November 5th election. In Washington state, some 48,000 Democratic votes were uncommitted in protest of the president's support for Israel's war in Gaza. That's just more than 7% of the vote. Lebanon is warning Israeli strikes deep into the country are threatening a wider war in the Mideast. Lebanon says it will file an appeal to the United Nations Security Council. This comes as Hezbollah and Hamas figures are among those killed in Israeli strikes in Lebanon, and intense overnight strikes hit Gaza, including an UNRWA distribution site in Rafah. Gaza's health ministry is reporting 88 people were killed in the last 24 hours. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today doubled down a ground invasion into the southern city of Rafah, days after U.S. President Joe Biden called it a red line. At the United Nations Security Council Tuesday, European Union Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell accused Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders and seven Democrats have sent a letter to President Joe Biden calling on the administration to stop sending military aid to Israel. The letter says the administration's violating the Foreign Assistance Act, which bars military support from going to nations that restrict delivery of humanitarian aid. Catherine Carley reports.
Stopping American humanitarian aid is in violation of the law. That should be clear. No more money to Netanyahu's war machine to kill Palestinian children.
Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders says the U.S. can't be complicit in starvation. He's pressing the Biden administration to enforce the Foreign Assistance Act, which would halt $10 billion in military aid if Israel continues to block assistance from reaching Gaza. Israel denies it's blocking the aid, but humanitarian groups say it is. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
An American Israeli soldier thought to have been in Hamas captivity was killed during Hamas's October 7th attack and his body taken to Gaza, 19-year-old Itay Shen. President Joe Biden said in a statement he was devastated to learn of Chen's death. His father was among the active relatives of hostages, demanding Israel's prime minister do more to secure hostage releases. The White House says the Pentagon will send $300 million in weapons to Ukraine after finding cost savings in its contracts. The Pentagon in December said it was out of replenishment funds as Ukraine runs low on munitions. House Republicans have refused to approve more Ukraine funding, but now Democrats and a group of centrist Republicans are launching efforts to force a vote on the issue and provide tens of billions of dollars in wartime aid for Ukraine. The discharge petition would need a majority of lawmakers, 218 members, to force a vote on the House floor. House Democrats announced the formation of a border security task force Tuesday. This comes after Republicans in the House blocked a border security package at the behest of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Edwin Vieira reports.
New Mexico Representative Henry Cuellar says Republicans have controlled the narrative by falsely painting U.S. border communities as dangerous when they're some of the safest in the country. Cuellar adds that though Republicans talk about strengthening the border, most voted against increased customs and border patrol funding.
The last two appropriation cycles, where we added $2.4 billion for CBP, that is for Border Patrol, adding new agents, support staff, the bonuses, the retention.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A House hearing on President Joe Biden's handling of classified documents turned into a proxy presidential campaign battle between Republicans and Democrats Tuesday. The Associated Press's Sagar Meghani reports.
Special Counsel Robert Hur had recommended no criminal charges against the president. Before the House Judiciary panel, Hur defended his written report that questioned the president's age and mental competence, but did not find enough evidence to bring a criminal case.
Most importantly, what I wrote is what I believe the evidence shows and what I expect jurors would perceive and believe. I did not sanitize my explanation. Nor did I disparage the president unfairly.
Democrats like Adam Schiff accused her of political games, saying he gave Republicans campaign